This is for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
And this is for the players, the pop culture PlayStation podcast. We've had 40 years of playing PlayStation and 5 plus years in that games media combined. We thought we'd throw our hat into the ring and join that PlayStation conversation.
Where's the energy, Ryan? If you would also like to join that PlayStation conversation, you can do so every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australia Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, iTunes, and other podcast services. How do you join that conversation, you may ask? Head over to www.thepopculturist.com/questions. Give us your questions, suggestions, and topics for the show. If a week between Talking Nerdy is too long, join us on Facebook, join us on Discord, and if you're feeling really generous, join us on Patreon, www.thepatreon.com. www.patreon.com/thepopculturist. Check out the tiers there. There might be something there that interests you.
It wasn't an energy thing. I was trying to be like sexy and sultry.
It doesn't work.
Speaking of sexy, this is Joel.
Joel, hey, introduce everybody. Yourself and what you do.
I am Joel Gralton, and I'm currently up here for PAX Australia, and these guys have kind of let me into their home to record this podcast.
Oh, we don't live together.
No. What? Contrary to popular belief.
I know I'm here a lot, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah, contrary to popular belief. No.
But you are also a content creator.
I am a content creator. So outside of helping these guys a little bit, I run my own anime and video games news and review website, anygame.com.
You can tell he does the written word because that was stretched out for no reason. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Good.
So if this episode is lacking in a little bit of energy, please forgive us because we have just gotten back from 12 hours of PAX.
Over two days.
And I've done 4 hours of driving today because we got halfway to the convention center. And Ryan, hey, I know we took your car yesterday. Did you happen to grab your press passes that you wanted to put in your glove box? Oh, shit! It's been a thing.
Effing long day.
Having said that, I haven't really had time to play too much. I did pick up Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
Put in about 4 hours to this point.
Doing all right?
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. That's about all I can say.
I'm in the same boat. Like, you know, thanks to Nintendo Australia, they sent us a copy of it as well. I spent a better part, or we spent the half an hour video. So I prepared like an hour and a half with it, maybe. Mm. Yeah, it's cool. It's pretty tight. Like, it's still has the same sort of issues that I mentioned in like way back, like the sort of, the game's tight as they're like, hey, it's tight. The controls are not tight.
No, it's they're not tight by design because that's how 3D... Now, it's not an excuse, but that is how 3D Mario has always handled. But this is a PlayStation show. What have you put in your PlayStation?
I put in...
The 20 minutes of Assassin's Creed you put in?
Will you just answer my question? Yeah, I put about 45 minutes of Assassin's Creed Origins last night. Joel and I played that. It was a nice surprise coming home from PAX after just purchasing Assassin's Creed Origins at the convention.
Because like, the man has no patience.
No, because I didn't know. Like we didn't ask for a copy. So we're like, oh man, I'll buy it and we'll go. It'll be all good. Come home to a lovely surprise from Ubisoft Australia. Like, hey good man, here's Assassin's Creed Ubisoft Origins. Australia. I'm like, hells yeah. So I've been played that for a half hour. I'm probably going to play more of it after this. I am also played some South Park.
Of course.
I'm about 10 hours deep now. It's pretty good for Betson.
That is very good
and
for
And we
Betson.
Also streamed and finished Until Dawn Rushable.
Oh yeah, we did that too, didn't we? Now Joel, I know you don't have a Switch, but you were on a flight this week and you did have a Vita.
Yes.
What were you playing on the flight?
Binding of Isaac and Super Meat Boy, to be honest.
Nice.
Just little small besties.
Yeah, like just a little jump in, jump out games while the people next to me on the plane just talk shit, so I just popped in there.
I want the Binding of Isaac so bad, but I want it on the Switch and I'm not paying
$80.
Stupid
not paying $69.95 for that game.
It's not worth that much money.
That's not worth. Oh, it probably is, but I'm a Jew.
There's enough
literally
content
I'm
there.
A Jew and I just can't warrant that much.
Not
money.
When you're
I paid
gameplay.
$8 for it on Steam.
Yeah,
like exactly.
In terms of gameplay value, if you value time spent to what you throw your money at, it's probably worth it, but then you've still got that as well with Stardew Valley. So you chucked in how many hours?
$17
over the last...
for 60 hours.
Yeah.
Woo!
So
catching.
So yeah,
who's controlling these prices?
Yeah, not a lot of gameplay this week. despite how big of a week it is, and next week is quite big as well. But that is the end of what we've been playing, where we transition segments.
We talk about the news where we inform you, the players, about the games, news that hit the thing. It's called Inform the Players.
You're a bit worse off than I am, I think.
It's been a long day.
I got home and I had two bowls of meager egg and I'm fucking fired up.
I was going to say, he's come with more energy today than I've seen him in the last 3 days.
Yeah,
you were angry as fuck the last 2 days.
Seven bits of news.
You know why? Because it's the lack of ramen.
I should have got some of that Destiny ramen at PAX.
I'll steal you some tomorrow.
We need to go find that.
Yeah, we need to find that shit. We should probably leave the building at some point when we're there. There's like a whole other building we was like ignoring.
Well, we went outside to see that ship where you played Sea of Thieves.
Polly Woodside. Oh yeah, I played Sea of Thieves.
No.
There you go. But past that segment, so you missed your chance.
Yeah, and it's Xbox.
You've already changed it.
Yep, and we couldn't figure out for the life of us how to get on that ship. So
Everyone's like, you play it there, line up there, but where you get on is blocked off, and you have to go like in this building and out there and down that ramp.
That's too much of it.
Really confusing.
We'll go over for a wander tomorrow.
Yeah.
News topic number one: Planet of the Apes: The Last Frontier is unexpectedly launched on 24th of the 10th for the PS4. The standalone cinematic adventure game was. Available for purchase for $30 on the PSN store. Last Frontier, which IGN exclusively revealed, was also originally slated for Xbox One and PC as well. However, as of the time of writing this article, which I did not write, I'll credit that to IGN, the game is not listed on either of those system stores. Planet of the Apes Last Frontier has been pulled from the PlayStation store, apparently having mistakenly appeared on the shop earlier today. Whoopsie daisy!
Why mistakenly, as in not named for release on PlayStation?
No.
Nope.
So IGN, I was reading the IGN article.
They bought a copy.
Yeah, they bought a copy of it.
I'm curious to see if it'll obviously work for them.
Who's gonna have the first review up? IGN, because they paid for it. Yeah, they've got it. So this game is kind of telltale-y, isn't it?
Yeah,
I haven't seen too much on it.
Yeah, it hasn't been too much on it. It was only like stealthily released around the same time the latest movie was announced. Yep, and then it was just said that it was going to be mainly cinematic, and I'm not sure if it has
So in terms of the game itself, it's set sort of in the same universe as the Planet of the Apes movies. However, it's not based on any particular story from Planet of the Apes, as in the current franchise. It's being made by.
Sorry, I don't know where that came from. That just slipped out. That's a ramen.
That's ramen. It's a ramen burger.
You put the chili pack in, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah. It's made by Andy Serkis's sort of.
sorry, Ryan.
Yeah, so it's made by Andy Serkis's mocap people. So apparently it's dope.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
pretty
it.
Pretty keen.
So it mustn't be too far off then, because it's obviously ready.
Well, I have a feeling that maybe they were just checking whether it could be uploaded to PlayStation Store.
Just like us putting a video on YouTube to hit schedule.
There's public, you know, private and scheduled, and they're like, all right, make sure you schedule that. Public.
Yeah.
Fuck. And then you got to pull it.
But yeah, if they have the ability to put it up on the store, it's likely rated, and if it's likely rated, it's probably coming out pretty soon, so.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on those PlayStation stores and try and see if you can.
I'm keen. I'm pretty fond of the movies. They're not. They're really good. They're really good. Just like popcorn movies, you know, to sit back and chill.
Apparently, the one that would just wasn't War. The center. The War, Planet of the Apes. Apparently, that was really good.
Yeah.
In terms of like. Because, you know, like this sort of the bunch of monkeys that aren't caught up in the war.
Yeah.
They're all super intelligent as well. They just want to live their lives, protect their family, and kind of cool idea.
It is. And I think when they first revealed this, they were. Pretty forthcoming. It's not a massive game. I think it's just an experience. It's like, it's only.
That's fine.
But
Ryan might actually finish it.
Not a chance.
Another thing Ryan never finished, Lego Dimensions has been cancelled. Segway. After various reports, Warner Brothers has confirmed that content support for Lego Dimensions will end a year earlier than originally intended. In a statement to IGN, Warner Brothers confirmed that developer TT Games will not be producing new expansion packs for the game beyond what is now available. Warner Brothers and TT will continue to support the game's servers, however, as the customer support for existing Lego Dimensions content packs. The joint statement reads, quote, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment, TTG Games, and the Lego Group would like to thank fans for their ongoing support of Lego Dimensions. After careful consideration, we will not be producing new expansion packs for the game beyond what is now available. We will continue to provide ongoing server and customer support for all Lego Dimensions packs. Existing packs will continue to work interchangeably and will remain available for purchase. Lego Dimensions ends with its 2-year cycle of content, which included 80s characters like Battlejuice, Gizmo, and E.T., as well as more recent
Battlejuice?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Beetlejuice.
Oh, it says Beetlejuice.
Wait, Battle Juice. That sounds like an energy drink in a bad movie.
And more recent hits like Battle Puff Girls, Teen Battle Titans Puff Go. Girls. I meant that. Teen Titans Go, a 30-year planner, reportedly would have featured fan favorite villains Lord Vortec, a Minecraft expansion, and The Flash, among other characters that they miss out on watching. So you're a day one buyer of this, Ryan.
I wasn't a day one buyer, but I was very early on.
Because we first saw it at EB Expo 2015.
That's correct.
And the guy that was at the booth, the bus was. Us was rad. It was cool to talk to.
Yeah, he sold it.
And he sold it really well.
So it wasn't a day one purchase. It was a very early purchase. Yeah. I remember, we bought it in like the November. So it came out in like October, sort of roughly near EB Expo. And I remember purchasing it, and we just kept it for Christmas, and we had it all wrapped up. And nice. I spent Christmas lunch building the shit at the table.
How many hours have you put in?
Probably not as much as always, but I got really into buying the packs because I like the packs better than the game.
So you shit on people that buy like Skylanders and stuff, but you're doing the exact same thing.
I shit on Skylanders. I shit on Amiibo.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, but I don't give two fucks about majority of the Nintendo. As in if someone's like, hey, you want to check out this Waluigi Amiibo? I'm like, no.
Having said all of that, I did get it for my son at some point, and we got halfway through building the portal and haven't touched it since.
So you didn't even get into the game?
Didn't even get to load the game up.
Yeah, so the game's pretty swell. Like I said, if it's the only place where you can buy Doctor Who Lego.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yep. And the one thing that's great about the mosh Batman and Lord of the Rings, and it's just like it's really cool that they've been able to cross all these franchises together. The only thing that was really fucking dumb is so you've got the platform in front of you and you have to physically move it on the platform.
It's toys to life.
Yeah, Dylan and I actually recorded a Let's Play way back in the day for it. Never saw the light of day because we had to have
that bad?
It wasn't very well. And
it wasn't very well.
The problem was we didn't have this camera at that time. We had Dylan's fucking phone. And because Dylan's phone's full of so much shit, it would only record in 10-minute blocks. So we'd record for 10 minutes, and then it would stop recording. We'd have to pull the 10 minutes off his phone onto the computer, do it again, and then just repeat.
Not worth it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I just wanted to strangle him by the end of it.
Did you pick it up at all, Joel? Did you ever get
No, I haven't touched Disney Infinity. Lego Dimensions. At all.
Are you not a Lego dude?
No, it's weird. I actually pick up quite a few of the Lego games, like the Lego Marvels and Batmans and the Lord of the Rings and whatnot they've got, but I just never got around to Lego Dimensions, but I love the idea of it. Having that aspect of the game that can be enjoyed outside of the software is really cool.
Awesome.
And building on a established kind of medium, everyone knows Lego. So it was...
See, that's to its credit probably why... out of the new wave of Toys to Life that it did in fact last the longest. Disney Infinity's really cool. They had some incredible properties, but when they shut down Avalanche,
the gameplay itself was bad.
Yeah, the gameplay wasn't too crash hot. So with Lego is a known commodity, everyone loves Lego, and they'll be able to pull some really cool franchises. But the problem is those cool franchises come with very expensive licensing fees.
Yes. Yeah.
And if those games aren't selling nowhere near when they need to be, those license fees add up really quickly.
Yeah. Even to print those things onto official Lego blocks and have them branded as Lego, I would assume would have a decent licensing fee as well.
Mm. So I think that's probably what it comes down to. without sounding horrible, this is the same thing that people have been talking about all week. With the idea of games as a service, you buy a pack once.
Yep.
Granted, there's 800 packs you could buy, but you only buy it once.
But saying that, one thing I will give it props for is
physical loot boxes.
Yeah, is there's as we heard on another podcast that we listened to, there's no way a standalone Beetlejuice game or Powerpuff Girls game or anything
that's a good point because they also mentioned
you can't release E.T. just on its own. So this had that medium.
They tried
E.T.
on their own on the Atari.
They
did,
and we
know
where
that went
up.
In a dumpster.
But there's no way those would stand alone or get any publisher backing these days. But Dimensions was kind of a medium that
they talked about
suck
the,
in
with Dimensions
things.
And they sort of made this weird transition into trying to entertain late 30s early 40s people. There's Goonies and Mission Impossible and Beetlejuice and Ghostbusters.
I think they went a little bit too far.
They
didn't seem to have a dedicated kind of age bracket they were going for. It's just
maybe
we'll get some from here and try to get all the people
Which is not which is a good and a bad thing, because like with Disney Infinity, I never bought it because I'm like, it's kids' things. And like, you know, Nintendo has that nostalgia value for Amiibo. Mm-hmm. And like the only Skylanders I have are the Crash ones because it's Crash.
Yeah. Because you have that childhood attachment to Crash.
Yeah, I got it for Christmas. Like Dylan bought it for me.
Speaking of childhood attachment, like they could have like they've gone for the 30, 40 year olds if they'd gone for other generations as well. Like, could you imagine like a Dragon Ball Z pack?
Yeah, but at the same time,
Elvis like, Presley pack.
Yep. See, I'm sure you're in this situation now, and I know community members Lee and Jess are in that boat. Is their kids love Skylanders, so they end up buying a lot of Skylanders. They're like, I don't fucking get it. The kids love it, but if you're a parent, and then it's like, Dad, there's this new game that has Ghostbusters, like fucking Ghostbusters in it. I'm like, I'm sorry, I swear at my child, but it's like, it has Ghostbusters in it. Yeah, we're going to jump on this game. I think that's what they were going for. And they made the right... I think they made the right decision. It was a good idea for a battle. But overall, it may have lost them the war.
Yeah.
Number three and
four. Speaking of Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, speaking of Dragon Ball Z, number three and four.
Oh, I see your segue there, but it failed.
Dragon Ball FighterZ will be released on Xbox One, PS4, and PC on January 26th. 2018, Bandai Namco also announced two editions of the game with bonus content. The FighterZ edition, which includes a FighterZ pass, adding 8 extra characters to be released at a later time, along with cosmetic items. So kind of like what Injustice have done with their...
Mm-hmm. Not just that, every fighting game these days.
Yeah, pretty much every fighting game these days. That's cool. We get it 5 days earlier than Japan, which is really weird, because they don't get it till February 1st, so I don't really... You know, Dragon Ball Z
reverse localization.
Yeah, so it's
still massively popular over there.
And the second release date is for Metal Gear Survive, Konami's upcoming Metal Gear Zombie Survival spin-off.
And the underpants being the worst fucking time right now.
Which we released in the US on February 2018 and in Europe 22nd of February 2018. But there's no Australian or New Zealand release date.
We're European.
Well, it's got in the article for Europe, they get on the 22nd. And then IGN said we don't have a release date for Australia.
Oh!
Okay.
So don't mean we fall under the same bracket as Europe.
Yeah, but in this case we didn't. That's why I clarified.
He got ya.
I only put that in there because I thought you'd be like, Metal Gear, woo! Or no, now that Kojima's gone, you're like, meh.
I think a lot of people forgot about this until last week when this news came out.
Oh. Okay. Well, I don't know why I put it in there then.
No, well, you put it in there for a good reason, so... Konami made a very clear statement a while back that they don't want to be in games publishing anymore.
They want to make pachinko machines.
They want to make, you know, other things. And then they pretty much came to a conclusion like, hey, we have this big Metal Gear license. Probably should do something with it. And...
let's shit out a zombie game. Yeah. Zombies are cool now, right?
Yeah, okay. And so what they're literally doing, and the way to get around not having to use Kojima's Metal Gear... is there's like a portal fucking breaks open in the sky somehow, and then these a handful of people get thrown into this other dimension,
multiverse
thing. So that's how they get around it. It looks dumb. I do not want to play it, but I think about it because apparently it's bat too stupid and it's blasphemy to the Metal Gear name, but apparently it plays really good.
Yeah, that's as much as people want to get on that like fuck Konami train. From what I've seen, everyone's like, yeah, we don't want to like it, but we like it.
It plays well.
Just in name only.
Yeah.
Well, maybe in name only. No, because the game is really good.
Apparently solid.
So I've never been in the Metal Gear loop, so
I don't think you'd need to be able to pick this up. And I'm guessing they'd probably have like a Battlegrounds mode put into this at some point. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
A Battle Royale mode.
Battle Royale. Yeah. It's
all right, then. Well, something I do care about. Warner Brothers will distribute... Well, yeah, there's that too. We'll distribute an updated retail version of Rocket League when it hits stores this holiday season, Psyonix announced.
Okay.
This retail release will be available on PS4 and Xbox One. Will be an updated version of the hit game, though specific details on the content will be confirmed at a later time. Psyonix Vice President Jeremy Dunham called Warner Brothers the ideal partner to help publish Rocket League for another level. Dunham notes that he was impressed with Warner Brothers after previously teaming up for Rocket League's Batman v Superman DLC.
This is really cool because we were under the impression that that Rocket League hasn't been released physically yet, and then Dylan of all people stumped us. We're like, oh fuck, all right, cool. So like that part's really cool.
He's like, yeah, it has. I'm like, shut up, Dylan.
Dylan. You know what? I think you faked that. That's fake news.
No, then he showed the real.
From that,
real
yeah, one. I knew it came out physically, but I'm guessing they must have had a limited print kind of thing or lost its.
No, I think it was just regular. Yeah. And we were idiots because we had it. We didn't look for it.
No, but like why they're redistributing it under Warner Brothers now.
Because I think the whole idea.
Yeah, but what Joel's saying is it hasn't. Rocket League physical hasn't been in stores for like well maybe over a year, maybe then. Nearly 2 years. Yeah. Like it's
well, even in that listing that Dylan brought up, it was a pre-owned copy only, for $58 or something. I'm sure that game was like $22 on PS.
I'm sure this will be like you know how they do like Game of the Year editions. Here's all the DLCs so far,
which is like hundreds of little bits and pieces. Yeah, and there's Rocket League.
Fucking heaps of it. Playing it doesn't take a lot of internet bandwidth, but downloading all the additional updates work.
Correct, and it'll obviously work out to be better on your pocket. To probably get this than buy everything individually. So cool. Good on Rocket League. It's still fucking smashing goals left, right, and
kicking
center.
Butts.
Last bit of news, which will lead us into the topic of the show.
I don't want to if that's the case, you want to go through the best selling games, then we'll read that article and go straight into the main topic.
Fucking tell me what to do on my fucking show. Yeah, that's actually a good idea. Top selling PSN games for the week ending the 22nd of October 2017. I've got it on my phone because reasons. Starting at number 10, PlayStation VR Worlds. Number 9, The Evil Within 2. Number 8, GTA 5. Number 7, Crash Insane Trilogy. Number 6, NBA 2K18. Number 5, WWE 2K18. Number 4, Shadow of War. Number 3, FIFA 18. Number 2, South Park, The Fractured Butthole. And number 1, GT Sport.
So someone's buying that car game.
It's funny, like every time there's a sports game at number 1, I'm like, fucking really? But then there's this whole huge subsection of gamers that just play sports
games. Yeah, man, people like...
And it's not me, obviously, but like... I always underestimate them in terms of sales.
Yeah, like with GT Sport as an example, like there are people that'll be buying a PlayStation for GT.
Yeah
probably.
Like literally. Yeah. Right, they were the same people that would have bought a PS3 for it, and you know, and like this was the game they were waiting for. People love racing sims.
It's late, isn't it? Wasn't it due out like ages ago?
It was due this time last year.
Well, you can think anyone in the world that's probably bought a racing steering wheel for their console has probably picked up that game.
Yeah, like wouldn't surprise me.
So yeah, 4 of the top 10 games are sporty games.
NBA makes sense, but having it drop down to 7th is interesting.
Six.
That's like that's a bit of a drop. Really?
Yeah, well, FIFA's still at number 2, WWE's still at number 5, so...
Like, yeah, FIFA makes perfect sense. South Park, hells, yeah.
Next week's list will be super interesting. Yeah, so Wolfenstein
with the addition
and Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, it's going to be a big switch up. Mm. And Just Dance, of course.
That's another game where I'm like, who cares? And then it's like number 2.
Yeah, but it's a very family-friendly game.
I had 2014 or 15, and I had a great time with my kids. We really actually enjoyed playing that game. It's a lot of fun. All right, final bit of news leading us into the main topic, which the main topic is... What was the main topic again? How are we titling this?
Well, the video should be called PAX Australia and the Fate of Single-Player Games. But as we get to talk about PAX Australia, which might do that after. the Fate of Single-Player Games.
The Fate of Single-Player Games because of all
I feel like I'm sounding really flat. Like, I didn't drink any water today. Mm-hmm. I've yelled... Because it's so loud, I've been yelling all day.
I noticed you have a water bottle right there that's still full.
Yeah, but I actually have chapstick on because I didn't drink enough water. My lips are hurting. They're all cracked. And if I drink water, it'll remove the chapstick. And then that's going to hurt more. So, like, I'm sorry for the monotone voice. It's just my voice is blown.
The future of single-player games because of all this business going on with Visceral and Star Wars and
also,
people...
Also, side note, incredible article as of time of recording went out this morning. Jason Schreier, read that shit.
Okay, you done interrupting me now?
No.
Because of all this stuff happening at Visceral with Amy Hennig and EA. And shut the fuck up. So I pulled a quote from one of the guys at Guerrilla Games because GameSpot spoke to Tim Stobo at PAX Australia a couple days ago on the Thursday just to get his opinion on what's going on with the single games and whatnot. And I thought it was quite interesting. So I'll read you the article from GameSpot. The important parts of it anyway. Lately, the viability of purely single-player games has been making headlines. Can games that have no multiplayer components survive in today's market, where games try so hard to keep people engaged with the steady flow of post-release content? According to a developer from Horizon Zero Dawn studio Guerrilla Games, single-player games are not going anywhere, though they could become challenged by business considerations. GameSpot spoke with Guerrilla principal games designer Tim Stobo at PAX Australia. He pointed out that some of the most highly rated games of 2017 have been purely single-player player, listing off titles like his own Horizon Zero Dawn, along with Breath of the Wild, Middle Earth Shadow of War. In a quote from Tim Stobo himself, "I think Horizon proves that there is a future for really high-quality single-player experiences. The upcoming story expansion, The Frozen Wilds, proves that again. We're really committed to delivering that high-level quality experience for players. It does seem like maybe there is a business shift in other parts of the industry, but at Guerrilla, we're just focused on telling amazing stories."
Yeah, well done.
Thank you, Tim. Now this brings, thank you, Guerrilla Games.
Well, before we'll chat about that, and then we'll bring up what you were pitching earlier. Spot on. Like, there's not much more you can add.
You're like,
Tim, old Timbo, you're spot on.
Where is quoted saying a business shift in other parts of the industry? It's pretty much third parties, because that's what we're seeing. Activision and EA and 2K, they're the ones really embracing this games as a service.
Yep.
Whereas you look at Sony's first parties and you don't see it. You look at Nintendo's first parties and you don't see it. You look at Microsoft's and they don't exist at all. But you know what I mean? So
You didn't have to buy the accompaniment person in Cuphead.
Yeah, well, exactly. You didn't have to buy Mugman to play Cuphead. So it really is, it seems to just be the third parties that are really going ham on
which makes a bit more sense. So, like, with PlayStation as an example, or with the PlayStation show, with PlayStation, they luckily have the overhead of the console. As in, the money that's coming in from the console helps fund these first parties.
And PS Plus,
all those additional things. So, for them, they do get a little bit, they have a bit more of a financial incentive and a safety net to be able to focus on what games that people are asking for. EA and FIFA, EA and Activision, whatever, because their entire job is games development and games production. If anything can improve that,
that's an advantage. That's a good point, because they sell the consoles and PS Plus to put money into really good first party games, causing more people to come and buy a console and PS Plus, causing them to get more first, and it's just, you know, they've got that ecosystem where they can just keep going around and around and around. Whereas, like you said, 2K and Activision, as much money as they have, they don't have that extra capital coming in from selling hardware and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons with their shift, especially with as much as we hear this argument on the internet as it is, the whole idea of, you know, games have never, you know, games have been the same price for years. Like, it's not true.
No.
You know, and here in Australia, right? We use the PSN as an example, right? On day of release, the game is $99.95.
Yeah.
Then they have the Silver Edition or the Deluxe Edition. Yep. It's normally $115, $120. Then they have the Gold Edition, $140, $150.
And then there's the Season Pass to tack onto that.
Yeah, which is normally part of the Gold Edition. But, like, you're spot on with the point. It's like, so for us, games have already been increased by a third.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Having said that, too, is whether the base game has always been the same price doesn't matter, because the player base is expanding every day. And you look at why GTA 5 is always in the top 10, because there's always new people turning 18 every single day who are hanging out to get this game.
Yep.
See, and that's the point. Like, and you know, gaming as a medium is now the best it's ever been in terms of numbers, right? There are more gamers than ever.
Yep.
And those people are buying games. You know what I mean? So, like,
put that on a t-shirt, Ryan Betson. There are more gamers than ever, and those gamers are buying games.
But yeah,
What I'm essentially saying is, you know, 20 years ago, they would be selling, I'm being very conservative, I'm just for to prove a point, they would sell 15 games. Now, they'd be selling 80 games, 90 games.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because there's more people to sell to every single day.
So I get that, but at the same point, game development as a cost has drastically increased.
Yeah. Yep.
So where do you come down on that?
What's your sense?
What do you think?
Not only that, like, with the amount of games and the amount of game studios, and with gaming blowing up so big, you have a lot more games being thrown at you every year as well, rather than, say, 1995.
So that's like the negative response to
as well.
more gamers. Yeah.
Each company is then throwing way more money at their marketing budget, making the cost of those AAA games go way up as well, because they need to fight the other people that are also releasing their games on October 27.
Yeah, competition. Like, so that's the thing. With more gamers, with more games, competition is drastically increased. Mm-hmm. Like, however, you know, in terms of, you know, you're saying, you know, obviously marketing budget being an issue, I don't think so. I think you need to market your game.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. That. But they have to throw a bigger budget in, because such and such are also marketing their game, and that guy over there is also marketing their game, and they're all coming out within the same 2 weeks.
And honestly, that's where a lot of exclusive deals comes from.
Yep.
Like, that's why this game is with PlayStation, this game is with Xbox, because Xbox, PlayStation will throw money at them to make that a thing, and that thing helps them further marketing.
And marketing is just a really big circle jerk. I'm going to spend... For this game, this company is going to spend $5 million on marketing. Well, for a very similar game coming at the same time, that other company is going to spend $6 million on marketing. Well, then the company A goes, well, fuck, we better spend more on marketing than them,
because
their game is on more buses than our game, so we're going to put... And it just ends up being...
We need a spray paint a plane.
50% of the total amount of money spent on the game has suddenly gone... to marketing.
So the issue that the issue that we have when it comes with marketing, we sort of talk about, you know, marketing doesn't really affect us because we're knowledgeable. We're balls deep. Yeah, we're part of the industry. I mean, like, we know when things are coming. We know what's happening. So to the average person, which majority of the gamers are, they need that marketing to know something's out.
Yep.
And I feel good when I see, like, a bus with, you know, the latest big game plus, and I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, gaming,
The tram today, the tram with Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's awesome.
Nothing made me more happy when I saw when GTA 4 came out. There was a tram that was not just like a poster on the side. It was decked.
Yeah.
It was cool.
So, basically, Sony and Nintendo got you covered.
Yes.
Yep.
To summarize.
Yeah. Well, now, this is where it brought you in, Joel. You had a particular question faced around this conversation.
Yeah, I did. So, obviously, there's been a lot going on around the Visceral issue at the moment. I don't know if we're going to get into that or not. There's no point throwing blame at what might have caused it. But fact is that it wasn't going well. The EA didn't seem that there may be some kind of return coming, and shut it. So also in EA news, though, we got the news that Battlefront 2 is going to have a 5 to 7 hour campaign, which I think is perfect. And... got a whole heap of backlash online from people saying, "Oh no, that's way too short. We don't want that." So
of course it did.
It's the internet.
Yeah.
So I was trying to figure out, like, where's this middle ground that's gonna be sustainable for AAA games in the industry, and what do you guys think? Is it gonna be shorter games released more frequently to keep that money rolling in, getting rid of those 4 or 5 year dev cycles?
Nah. So. Battlefront 2.
Before we jump in, I just want to make up one point with like the internet having an issue with the campaign length, right?
Say like the internet, I was like, your PC is hot.
I'm just going to mention it pretty straightforward. The internet is full of people. People are people. This is like our good friend Tom Heath. People are people. People are garbage.
Yeah.
Shit never changes. So like, first of all, out of the bat, come your fucking shit.
Nothing is like, good enough.
You asked for it.
No, never good.
You got it. It's not the one I wanted. Shut up.
Battlefront 2.
Sorry, I had too much frustration.
Battlefront 2 is an FPS.
Yes.
And any modern FPS, Call of Duties, even to your Battlefields, and what's the one that started with M? Medal of Honor.
Hey, I just said Medal of Honor.
No, that's what I meant.
Cool.
So they've always, well, at least for the last 5, 6, 7 years, they've always been, here's a 5 to 10 hour campaign. And then it's multiplayer.
Yeah.
And to expect Battlefront 2's campaign to have been any different was just hyperbolic. Because it was developed as a multiplayer game. You begged and begged and begged for a single player content.
Coming off the
and
back
like,
of a game that had no campaign.
So
at
we'll
all.
Give you the average length campaign for a modern FPS title. You got exactly that. What more can you want from that? That's my point.
They wanted a full 40-hour. Witcher 3
open
style,
world.
See, having said that, Joel, to your point of, you like, do we get rid of the 4 or 5 year dev cycles? We can't, because then we don't get CD Projekt Red and Naughty Dog doing what they're doing, and those companies still turn a profit. And CDPR is probably the only self-published
game
that don't do the loot boxes and all of that microtransaction stuff, and they still make a fuck ton of money. It's just not all the money. I think that was a quote from you.
Yeah, that's a quote from Jim Sterling. Jim Sterling talks about how most, you know, third-party publishers like EA and Activision, because they are a business, and granted, businesses run on profits. Like, for them, it's not as simple as let's make enough money to pay everything and have some profit. It's we need all of the money.
So, what I think we need is a more dynamic pricing model. So you see, like, Hellblade have come out with really what is a AAA quality game. Like, it is up there with some of the best games this year. Not that I've played it, but I know enough about it.
Yeah.
and it was $30. Like, that is incredible. Mm. And they self-publish it. You know, they did everything by themselves, so that's awesome. Whereas, you know, just because we get a game now from ex-AAA, what we class as a AAA developer, it is $100.
Yeah.
Regardless of how long it is, regardless of how long it's been in development. Yep. Like, we get the annualized games like WWE and all the sports games, always a year in development, always maximum price. And I don't think that's healthy. Like, you either get your indie games for, you know, $5 to $20, and then you get your hunt full price games. And there's very rarely anything in the middle, regardless of what should, quote unquote, should be in the middle. And then that raises the issue or the question of how much is your dollar worth for playtime?
That's right.
Which is a whole other thing entirely. Because dollars for playtime this year, Stardew Valley wins hands down. I spent $17, I've got 60 hours. Persona 5, I put in 120 hours, but I paid $90 for that game. So percentage-wise, Stardew Valley, game of the year, you heard it here right now.
That was my game of year was subscription last year.
Yeah, it didn't even come out last year.
Yeah, no, but neither didn't.
But it was released on Switch this year, so I can use it in that category.
Pretty sure it came out on PS4 last year. It was the year before.
I'm not sure.
Anyway, you fucking cares.
You're about to say something.
The point of it, I like your idea. Dynamic pricing is fucking awesome. Mm. But one thing that needs to be done before that is to remove the stigma of a not full release, of a full price game. So right now, it's pretty, as you said, it's independence and it's AAAs. Like, the middle is like...
Where are the double A's,
the A's, there's the middle is...
that middle ground's kind of fallen out.
I talk all about how a lot of other, you know, like media, so the middle has dropped out. Like, it has, and it's coming back.
Sorry, just to jump in on this double A thing. Like, you look at games like what I would consider double A games, The Evil Within 2, Prey. You know, they're not perceivably anyway up there with Call of Duty and, you know, what you typically associate a AAA game to be. So I think games like those, like development costs aside, should be the B-grade games. They, not everything has to be AAA.
Mm. Well, because, yeah, coming from that, you know, like, so in terms of the stigma, right, let's talk about, like, Ratchet and Clank.
Yep.
That game was released at a double A price. Like, here in Australia, it out of the gate was $60, which for us, you know, is fucking good.
Rare to see. Fucking mind.
It's real good.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, well worth every dollar. The internet was like, well, it's cheaper. Why would it need to be cheaper? It's kind of like, what does that mean about the, what does that say about the game? It's like, no, the game's fucking fantastic.
The game was amazing. I finished that game. It was so good. Crash Insane Trilogy. While it's a remaster, built from the ground up, it may as well, in terms of development, it's a brand new game.
Yeah.
$60. Awesome.
Most of the remasters were $49.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Most other remasters would try to slog you with $100.
Yep. No, Last of Us did it, but it was worth it.
Yeah. But, you know, and that's the thing. People are all like, oh man, why is it not $100? Why is it not $60 US? Like, is there a reason? Is it bad? They don't have faith in
Uncharted
it?
Uncharted Collection. Three AAA games for the price of one.
Yeah.
And then you kind of got that other end of the spectrum as well. I don't know if you remember early this year. No, it was the year before. Mm. The Witness came out. Digital-only game coming from a very indie studio. You got to
play the fuck out of that.
I got it. I loved it.
And then I got stuck. I was like, and then I left.
People kind of... It also changed up that pricing model. It didn't go that indie $22 kind of price range. It didn't go to the $100 price range. It was like $55. Mm. And people were like...
Mm. And people were like... Well, what? $55, it can't be that good.
It's an indie game. It can't cost that much money.
See, once again, that's the stigma. And the stigma goes the other way. The stigma's like, $50, that's... Why isn't AAA? It's like, it's independent, it's not worth $50.
The problem with dynamic pricing is that it takes one company to make that first step towards it.
Yeah.
And no one wants to be the first. Yeah. Because one, it might fail. Two, the stigma is still there and they're the only ones going up against it. Mm. And three, I didn't have a third, I just wanted to say number three. Mm. But you know what I mean? No, Bethesda doesn't want to be the first to bring in, you know, double A games for as a price slot. Activision don't want to do it. EA won't do it. 2K won't do it. Sony won't do it. Like, no one will take that first step. So there's companies like Ninja Theory, who also raised $60,000 for charity off Hellblade
in 1 day.
In 1 day.
£60,000.
£60,000. What's that, like 100K? I don't know. But that's awesome. But that's why we need companies like Ninja Theory, who are like pushing that envelope. They're like, here is fucking good game with an incredible message, and it looks amazing. It looks like any AAA game that's come out this year, and it's $30. Wow. We need more companies doing that.
But in terms of what the other option that Joel gave, which was, you know, as in like maybe shorter games more often. No.
You might finish more.
That's highly unlikely.
But Hellblade kind of fits both those things.
Mm.
Yeah, it's, you're about right. A 6 hour
campaign. Yeah. See, I do certainly
AAA quality, just made by less amount of people. It was like a 14 to 30 development studio, depending on.
It just
on
needs
what time
to be coming from studios that aren't EA and Activision and all that. You know, that they are the very much.
You've got a lot of those THQ properties still floating around in development, and you got a Darksiders coming. So
I forgot about that.
Curious to see if anything changes up there, or if it straight up comes out at $100.
Mm.
We don't know.
Yeah. You're deep in thought.
I had a point, I forgot what it was.
Shorter dev cycles?
Shorter dev cycles, too many games. Killing the airtime here.
Yeah, my brain.
I think you were slightly disagreeing with my point of that we need the shorter games, shorter development cycles.
Correct. So.
You had it and then changed what it was, and now I've interrupted you, you're going to forget again.
Yeah. No, like, so the biggest problem like that is existent in games dev is. People, you know, with that idea that the dollar value equals number of hours. 8 hour game that's $100, not worth it. A 60 hour game that's $100, that's worth it. That 60 hours could be padded up to the shit, but it's 60 hours. And I think that's the problem. I think the problem is a lot of them are like, look, we're going to be charging AAA prices, therefore we have to give it some sort of AAA time. No, you don't. Make the game that'll best represent what you're trying to say, what your direction is, and if that happens to be 7 hours and it's a tight, cohesive story, it hits all the beats. It's 7 hours.
Good pacing. I'll go with it.
You know what I mean? Like, if they came out and said a Battlefront story is 15, 20 hours long, I'm like, how much padding is in that fucking game?
But then it could come out and be like every minute. It's just like, holy fuck.
That's what I'm saying. It's 7 hours. That could be a jam-packed 7 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's ultimately up to every individual, you know. How do they value their dollar for playtime? Like, you look at the Order 1886 when it came out. People were screaming that the game was way too short. But apparently what was there was really fucking.
It was really good. I had a great time with the Order 1886. Yeah.
And then you look at you can look at games like The Witcher, where you can put in 200 plus with the expansions and everything, and pretty much every minute of that game you are doing something that is cool and meaningful. Yeah. And
based on that model?
Yeah.
CD should be selling you that game for $800.
Yeah, pretty. If you want to go off that model, you'll be paying for Cyberpunk 2077, you'll be probably paying $300.
See, that's how, like, companies like CD Projekt Red, I think they have an advantage where if they were to break this, do this dynamic pricing, if they were to come out and say, hey, like, we'll talk US prices, so they're like, hey, Cyberpunk 2077 is huge. It's The Witcher on roids. And as a result, we're going to need to charge $70 for the game. Because if they say sell 8 million copies, as an example, with $10 less, $10 more on each copy, that's a substantial jump. And that's no season passes, that's no loot boxes, that's no microtransactions, that's just an additional bump. Like, remember that one time when PS Plus jacked up their price by $10?
Yeah.
And we looked at how many people have PlayStation Plus, and we did calculations, it was like $250 million.
Yeah, a month? That's yearly.
They said 35% of the player base has PlayStation Plus, we're at about 65 million. Mm. 35% of that's about 20 million, roughly. And then 20 million people paying extra $10 a month is another $200 million. Just rough numbers. That's fucking insane. Yep. But the thing is, Cyberpunk's been in development for so long. I know what we're talking about, but it's been in development. We first saw it at 2014 E3, and it's like obviously been mucked around with before that as well. So if CDPR came out and said, what we have here is special, and for us in Australia, it's going to be $109.95. I'd be like, cool. Yeah.
They have
earned
so much goodwill.
You guys have earned enough goodwill and enough faith from me that I take you on your word, and I believe that this will be worth every penny you're asking for.
See, that's the point. What you've said right there is the entire point. You know, in terms of like, dynamic pricing works, but you've got to earn it. Like, Activision will like, the Destiny 2 is going to be so good that we're going to be charging $120. I'm like, you're fucking full of shit. You could not be any more full of shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And CDPR are really an anomaly in the industry because, you know, they self-publish everything and that, you know, they're not tied to anyone and they haven't fallen down this microtransaction business. Yep. Like, they're one of the only companies to have done it. Bethesda to an extent, but then they've got the Creation Club for all the mods and everything.
Yeah,
now.
So like, but see, Bethesda were like, see, they're another studio, another company that has that goodwill behind them. So, like,
for the most part, the last year's been a bit rocky for them.
It's been rocky for the last year because they're trying to adapt to the current market and all that sort of stuff. So, if they just held to their grounds and went well, and, you know, because, like, I think the reason we haven't seen anything new from, like, Bethesda Softworks is because they're building a new engine. Like, and that shit costs money.
It's gotta be.
Like, they're starting from scratch.
There'd be a team working on pre-production stuff, but they have a tools team that are definitely revamping their...
If they came out and said, The Elder Scrolls 6 is on a brand new engine, you know how Skyrim was...
We learned from
Fallout 4. We got a new engine. We got a new Elder Scrolls. We believe it's that good that it's going to be $109.95. I've probably taken the word and go, the amount of time I put into Skyrim, I believe you that I will get my money's worth from that price.
Yes, and the same goes for Rockstar as an example. Yeah. If they're like, Red Dead Redemption is going to be $115 standard because this game is so huge and it's, you know, you know what we do. And like, that's one of their company, you're like, yeah, I know what you do.
There will be pushback, of course, because internet.
Yeah.
But
people are garbage.
All those studios you just mentioned are known for quality stuff.
Exactly.
And I think if someone like EA came out or Activision, like you said, Pete, instantly, even probably myself, I'd be like, yeah, no.
I'd be like, fuck.
I'd be like, yeah, get fucked. I'm not paying that.
CD Projekt, they have so much goodwill and really, really appreciate their fans and their player base. Did you, like, when you open up that Witcher 3 for the first time and there was that letter in it, like, thank you guys so much for buying our game. Yeah. I was like, oh, these guys are real.
And the thing is, like, EA and Activision would probably, if they did that, and like, you know, we believe this game's worth $109.95, you'd open it and there'd still be a store there with loot boxes and all that other shit in there, and fuck that.
See, because everyone sort of forgets that Rockstar are a third-party publisher.
They're owned
by Take-Two, who owns 2K, and see, and this is what it comes down to. 2K as a company, because of Rockstar's goodwill and their good history, they're like, how much do you need?
Pretty much.
Because they have faith in that brand. Like, they obviously, you know.
Plus, GTA Online is just.
Yeah, but GTA Online, when they pitched it, they didn't know it was going to be the success that it was. So it's not as if they went in going, we're going to make it online.
Yeah, you know.
Do you think they're going to ham that into Red Dead?
Not ham it in. I think it'll be.
Because Red Dead Redemption had multiplayer.
Yeah.
It was good. It was really good. Like, not in the same way of GTA Online, but it was fucking good. So it wouldn't surprise me that Red Dead Redemption 2 has multiplayer. But the point I'm making is, like, this is where we go in the lines of EA and Viscera, right? Take-Two, they own Rockstar. They go, we own you, yes, but we know that you are in the business of making incredibly, insanely good single player. That's why we have you.
Yep. Mm.
Yes, you make good multiplayer now as well, but that, you know, that's not why we got you. We got you for here. And EA are the same thing. They're like, Visceral are making what would have been Redwood at the time, right?
Mm.
Like, Redwood, like, you guys made a really incredible single player story. So we're going to take it. We're going to bring you on the EA brand and then proceeded to fuck with it and fuck with it until it died. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. Rather than just being like, we got you for this.
We got you for a reason.
We got you for this reason.
We're going
to
let you go.
And we're going to allow you to do what you need to do for what we wanted you for.
Mm. Saying that, though, I think it may seem
with
Visceral
as an example. Yep. With Visceral as an example, there seems to be a lot more additional issues.
I think they gave them a bit that freedom, and then they didn't like what they got in return in the time frame.
Yeah, because I think that's it. I was using that as an example, but there are from what the reports that are coming out.
There's a couple of reports coming out that are shedding a bit of light.
It looks as if it's not as simple as EA just going no. Nah. There's a lot of internal issues there, but that was just an example of we acquired this studio, you know, and then we did it. Another example is with PlayStation, with Sony and Guerrilla Cambridge. They brought that studio in. I can't remember what it used to be, and then they rebranded as Guerrilla Cambridge, and then they actually kind of put it in a place to die.
Yeah, they really
like they gave it a Vita game, they gave it a VR game, they gave it a set of criteria that set it up to fail.
I'm hoping Ben to pull off this zombie
and
game.
And if they pulled it off, I think Ben's fine. Cool. That worked well in our favor. But if not, we already got the plans for
you. Yeah, because if it didn't work out, like, you didn't do it. Like, you literally loaded the gun in front of me. You made me load the gun.
And pointed at myself.
And the point I'm making is that lack of confidence in that studio. Like, if, like, And that's what it needs to be. Yeah. That's what it needs to have. Like third parties, rather than going, we need all the money. So what, you know what makes money apparently? Loot boxes. Like rather than just be like, look, we're going to make these fucking killer experiences that people ask for. And like this is like another example everyone talks about as well. Like single players are dying. I'm like, and they use the examples of Dishonored 2, Evil Within 2,
Prey.
Or granted, they're all Bethesda titles. And you know, there's a handful of like
Wolfenstein 2.
You know, that's going to do really well. But there are a couple other examples of games that you know didn't do so well. Like EA talking about Mirror's Edge as an example, right? These were games that were sequels of not very popular games.
They were cult classics. They were cult classics.
People begged for. The internet, the loud minority were like, these games are fucking fantastic, make more of them. And then they released those games, and like, granted, they were fucking...
Yeah,
like, except for like fun. Catalyst. Catalyst was pretty bad. Like, these games rated really, really well. So like, critically, they were fantastic. But because they were listening to such a minority... When it came out, they're like, we didn't get the numbers we projected. We project from the loud noise of the internet, we thought we'd get...
From the 20 people on the EA forums who were screaming their word.
Yeah. See, and this is... As much as I love the internet gives everyone a voice, and everyone uses that voice to yell in the internet. And then people base their business decisions on this group of yelling people. So rather than making what should be a good decision, they're pandering to an audience that yells.
A small audience.
That was a good chat. Gone a little bit long, but I enjoyed that chat. Does anyone want to have any closing thoughts on the topic?
Look, if you want to, just adjust the prices. That way it'll take out loot boxes, take out microtransactions. Season passes aren't going anywhere. That's fine.
They've been around for a very long time.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. It's better than the online passes we used to have.
But as much as we rag about loot boxes, numbers have come out from various companies and they're fucking selling and they're making so much money.
There's a reason that Activision? I think Activision has made more money on its microtransactions than it has on any game that it's sold.
Yeah, well, Activision Blizzard are the same kind of umbrella, and I know that they said in just from Overwatch alone, I believe that it was in like the figure of like $3 billion in the last year from the loot boxes.
They're not going anywhere. And I'm like,
they're not going anywhere. What needs to happen is we'll find the right balance. What the market is doing right now, they're seeing how far they can push us. They're seeing how far they can push the consumer base, and the consumer base needs to push back to bring that balance. Season passes is an example, right? There was all this push, an example with Battlefront last year. Like, the season pass is $60. Everyone's like, what the fuck?
Yep.
And then suddenly, all season pass, and like, there's a couple others that tried to push that $60 mark.
Arkham
is an example. And then you're noticing how a lot of season passes are kind of moving back to like 30, back. 40 bucks.
Yeah.
And they've not really gone much higher.
See, the thing is, we can have it all. We can have your big AAA single player $99.95 experiences, and we can still have the games like that are dropping in all the loot boxes and stuff. But I think their base price needs to come down to coincide. You drop your base price
and you have microtransactions. Yeah,
you lose $30 off the initial sale price, but then you make that much as a not only just a goodwill thing. I just think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, like I know people like with right now with Fortnite. Max is an example, but a buddy of ours in the community. He played Fortnite Battle Royale because it was free. And he's like, I fucking enjoying so much that I'm buying the base game. He bought the base game, which was about $45. He has then
Even though it will be free.
He has then proceeded to upgrade his pack 3 times.
Wow.
So he's closer to paying $140 for this game.
Yeah. But if him as an individual deems that worth his money, fucking cool.
The point I'm making is because they gave him that gesture of goodwill.
Yeah.
As in like, yeah, I agree with you spot on. If Activision were like, hey, this next game is going to be, we'll use US prices. This game is going to be $40 US. Why? Because it is jam-packed with loot boxes and microtransactions, but we understand that. So we've taken the hit. It's not AAA price. Mm. That's the fix. Period.
Joel. You agree with all that?
Yeah, it's pretty common knowledge that a lot of these companies bank on the release day or first week of these games bringing in the biggest spike in their sales. So I don't know.
Dropping the price will make that number go up even further.
Dropping the price and maybe like really working on proper pre-order kind of stuff, like to get people in. I know many people don't pre-order games. I don't even pre-order games, if there was. Look at Ubisoft, for example. You pre-order South Park, we'll give you Stick of Truth.
You could buy it. But they say that, but if you went to the store and bought it now, you would get it.
Yeah.
You buy the game brand new, you get that code.
But
Then you get companies like Square trying to do the Deus Ex build your pre-order package where they hit certain amount of pre-order tiers and they add more things. That was so bad.
That's bringing like too much Kickstarter.
See, pre-orders used to be fucking dumb too.
Yep.
Notice how they're kind of scaling back as well. Mm. Most pre-orders now are literally season pass and a couple of little things.
Yeah.
Outside of collector's editions with statues and shit. Like, it's pretty low-key.
You always get a soundtrack and...
It's pretty low-key.
I'm all for a soundtrack and a good statue. That's how you get me to pre-order.
Hey, that Wolfenstein thing was pretty banging today.
It was pretty banging.
It was pretty banging.
We want to know what you think. Please drop us a comment in the YouTube channel or hit us up on any of the social medias. Let us know what you think. That was a very long talk. Thank you.
Yeah, friendly in our below areas.
Now for the fun part. Questions. We got one. Thanks, Max. Max wants to know, if we could be God-skilled at any genre of video games competitively, what genre do we pick and why? I'll come straight off the bat. Card games. Online card games.
Good one.
Simply because... Okay. Take a seat. StarCraft 2. South Korea. That is their sport.
Yeah.
Their esports players are the celebrities that you see walking down the street. All the people getting photos and autographs. That is that culture. They retire from StarCraft 2 and RTS at around the age of 30. Because the reflexes start to go and they just can't keep up with the 18, 19, 20-year-olds. There are exceptions, but as a general rule, you're retiring from that pro StarCraft II e-circuit at around the age of 30 because you're losing your reflexes. Same with shooters. Eventually, there's going to be an age where you just can't keep up anymore. I'm finding it now.
Yeah, we already
hit
that.
I'm well past that point.
We've well hit it.
Same thing with MOBAs, like League of Legends and Dota. Same thing. They're all reflex-based.
Mm.
Card games... fucking right up here. Now, unless you get dementia or Alzheimer's, you're fucked. But otherwise, I feel like that would give me the longest time to enjoy spotlight with card games. That's me.
If that's what you want the spotlight for a longer period of time.
Yeah. What haven't I thought of that you're about to drop on me?
No, I was going the other way. Whereas, like, if I'm able to be the god pro at this something, maybe by 30 I've got enough to be able to go retiring.
This is
quiet.
True as well.
So if I was going that route, I'd probably say, hey, make me somehow a master of League of Legends or something.
They do, yeah. I think last year's Dota Invitational, the prize for the winning the teams are 5-man teams, the prize was $5 million. It's $1 million each, and the guys that won were like fucking 22.
Yeah, well,
just go every year, get $8 million when you're up to 30 and just go, I'm fucking done.
Statistics came out that last year the most watched sporting event in the world was the Super Bowl, but straight under that was League of Legends World Finals.
Yep.
So a lot of people don't realise how big esports is, but hey, if I can be a master at something, it'll be that. And then I'll
get in and get out. I'd be in it for the long haul, I think. You've been pondering over there for a little while. What?
Racing games. Transferable skill, bitch.
But are they played on any like a esports level? You don't care?
Who cares? The whole point I'm making is like, if you can do some quality sim racing in like a booth, mm-hmm. you can bring that shit to the racetrack. When your time as an esports burns out, go ahead and take on Bathurst. You know?
But that's the only one of the options here that gives you the actual chance of death.
Carpal tunnel.
Only, no, it's only.
Yeah,
like,
what if you get carpal tunnel while you're drifting? Ah, my fingers.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you start as esports, and when your time, like when you start slipping or you're not quite as prominent.
Yeah, that's when you hop in a car.
That's when you hop in a real car.
You're not slipping, but like everyone, every player has their peaks and their lows. Like, so as my popularity as you know, esports player, because people love, you know, esports is a younger man's game, right? Mm. So it's nothing to do with my skill set. It's me as a esports celebrity. My popularity starts to fade. Step away. Go ahead. Go into the car racing. Get myself some 6 sponsors.
Bethesda, Sony, sponsoring NASCAR for Ryan.
And imagine that. Like, I could have, like, say I was a professional, funny enough, GT sport player, right?
Yeah.
Which, mind you know, you do get the licensing in GT sport, which can actually allow you to drive particular tracks in real life.
Cool.
You know, my car could be sponsored because they're like, you know, 2017 GT sport world champion Ryan Benson.
I just never took you for a speed demon.
I'm not. I'm impractical.
This is a fantasy world.
I have way too many motion sicknesses to can even consider doing that, let alone the anxiety of driving that fast.
What about you guys listening? Smart. What would you choose if you could be peak level of any video game genre in the world for monetary gain? What would you choose? Please let us know.
You see the Porsche there at PAX today?
Yeah, with the one.
The Xbox brand on all over.
Yeah, that's just it's just a Porsche that's just decorated.
It's just a Porsche.
Like, it's not a race. Like, no one's racing that car. They've just covered it in green.
No, but like, Microsoft, sell that shit. Open a studio, make games or something.
Why are they putting all their money into fake cars that don't go instead of first party titles?
Yeah, the car's actually a big shell. Yeah. It's fake. Yeah, it's a hologram. Do you know why it said don't touch?
It's not even there.
Nothing to do with the cost.
Because you'd fall through it.
Yeah, it's like, don't touch it. Why? It's not there.
That's it. As we move into the final segment that we call Coming to the Players.
With the drow.
Now, this week is pretty tame. Next week is pretty tame.
Sorry, go ahead.
Next week is pretty tame compared to this week.
Update to last week's Coming to the Players. We mentioned from the drop that Knowledge is Power and
Hidden Agenda
were hitting stores. That is US. In Australia, they do not hit the PSNs until the 22nd of November.
Speculating it's got something to do with the App Store, seeing as it's both the same time and the apps aren't on the App Store yet.
Yeah.
That's all I can do.
Because with That's You as an example, the app was released about 3 weeks before the game came out, and we're not seeing that here, so I think that's the problem.
Right, I'll go through all the games. Stop me if you want to talk about one, starting with this doozy. .hack/g.u/lastrecode PS4 digital and retail. I was hoping you'd stop me there. 8-bit Adventure Anthology Volume 1 PS4 digital. Ben 10.
Wow.
PS4 digital.
Might have been Ben 10.
It's
colon.
Just Ben 10.
It's Ben 10.
Just Ben 10.
Just straight up Ben 10.
Bubsy.
Like, three.
The Woolies Strike Back PS4 digital.
Right
and
Valley,
I've got it on my SNES, the original Bubsy. It's one of the worst games I've ever played in my life. Call of Duty World War II.
Classic that enough people made.
It's not
about,
even
that,
a cult
like,
classic.
Made a
no.
Game
everyone
I don't,
has it.
Don't
has
know why
it.
They're doing it. I don't know why they're doing it. Be interesting.
Never my thing.
COD World War II.
Yeah, I'm keen as F.
Out next Friday.
I'll be no doubt picking that up because I'm keen to get that.
Yeah, because you totes got time between Wolfenstein, Assassin's Creed, Super Mario, and
I didn't say I'm picking it day one. I'm just picking it up.
For the Vita, Pox Nora Digital.
That sounds like a rash.
Hmm.
Also for the Vita, this sounds like what you do to a rash. Rubby Ruby.
Rubby Ruby.
PS4, PS Vita Digital. We've got a lot of high fives this episode. Sokoban Next, PS Vita. Spin Tires Mud Runner, PS4 Digital and Retail. Steven Universe Save the Light, PS4. Apparently Steven Universe is a big thing. A lot of people really like this. I don't know about it. So yeah,
it's in that same kind of vein of like the Adventure Timey kind
of Adventure Time
Network kind of something for the adults, something for the kids.
The Adventures of Gumball, you know, that kind of stuff. So thankfully, quite a week next week, COD being probably the biggest, obviously the biggest thing of note.
That's why it's empty, I think, because everyone knows COD.
Because the gaming industry as a collective whole blew its fucking load this week.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there's not much.
And I don't think anyone expected them to all be as good as they are.
Yeah, they're all rating really well.
I thought there'd be at least one bad one. Mm. They're all great. That's awesome. Because you know what? They're all single player games.
That's right. I had to think about that for a second.
Even good guy Bethesda out there, Machine Games, said, no, we're not putting it in there.
Yeah, because it would dilute the story. If you like that PlayStation conversation, you can join in many more.
Before we jump in there, I can interrupt you again. We were going to talk about PAX Australia.
Oh, we were, weren't we? I forgot we did that thing today.
But we did go really long in this conversation about the single players. Let's wrap it up nice and quickly. It's predominantly what we played at EB Expo with some additional indie games that weren't on PlayStation.
Nothing against PAX. It's just 3 weeks ago, we saw pretty much everything that was already there, with the exception of the tabletop area where Joel and I played the Final Fantasy TCG.
Yeah, really, really cool.
So
we're, talking compared to PlayStation, obviously Final Fantasy links in.
Oh yeah,
but yeah,
we'll talk PlayStation.
Yeah, outside of PlayStation stuff, there is literally nothing different from EB Expo.
Yeah, we played some games that you just mentioned.
Yeah, that's true. We did play Hidden Agenda and we did play Knowledge is Power. Knowledge is Power is like buzz.
Yeah, it was fun.
Knowledge is Power, that was fun. Hidden Agenda, I know, will be really good, but unfortunately, you just,
in that environment,
because it's such an atmospheric and soft-spoken game, we couldn't hear it in that environment. And the second half of the demo had no volume at all.
It was so low,
minuscule,
because it was like two people talking in a room. So
yeah, so that really kind of took away from the experience, I think. But the idea behind the game is very cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot, actually.
I think that'll be a fun one to play once it comes out.
Yeah, definitely. God of War Experience was back there again.
Yeah.
A lot of people, including our buddies, thought you could play the game.
Credit to PlayStation Australia. They were very misleading with their initial social media. It's like, get your hands on Skyrim VR, GT Sport, Detroit, God of War. And I emailed the PR guy. I'm like, hey man, is God of War playable? And then sure enough,
10 minutes later, changed.
All the social media changed. I'm like, thanks. Thanks, Taylor. Anyway, now you can wrap it up.
Okay. If you like that PlayStation conversation, you can join in many more every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, iTunes, and other podcast services. If you want to, if you do want to join in that conversation, www.thepopculturist.com/questions. Give us your thoughts, questions, and suggestions for the show. If a week between shows is too long, please join us on Facebook, join us on Discord, and please consider joining us on Patreon. Head over there, check out the tiers. There might be something there that interests you.
I just totally realised I bought a Kojima production shirt as well.
You did.
That's PlayStation. I'm Ryan Benson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
I'm Joel Gralton.
And that is for the players.